Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Tuesday, and I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Hope you had a great weekend. I was out of town. Glad to be back in Tallahassee. It only takes a couple of days down in Central Florida or South Florida to make you really appreciate North Florida. So I'm glad to be home. Again, hope everybody had a safe weekend. Got a great show for you today. So many things going on around in the capital city. Some good things, some not so good things, but we'll get to a lot of it today. We've got $100 million coming to town from the American Rescue Plan, from the federal coffers. This is the plan that's supposed to help municipalities and local governments recover or at least remain whole due to the COVID pandemic. So we reported last week that the city got about $46 million. And now we hear the county's going to get $57 million. So they've got a plan together on how to spend that. We'll go over that again. It looks pretty consistent in the buckets of money they want to spend. I don't know about the specifics of where we're going to, who's going to actually get it, but we'll talk about that a little bit. Also, law enforcement. You know, I'm going to try to remain a little bit calm on this, but just want the listeners here to know, you know, there's definitely something going on with regards to politicians trying to drive a wedge between their constituents, and they're doing a really good job of this at the national level, and they're trying their best to do it at the state level. And now we are starting to see evidence that, you know, this is what they're trying to do here locally. Also, I, you know, have been involved with the local side of things for a number of years, with the idea that we could sort of take some of the Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal hatred and emotional response to things out of what we do here locally and just, you know, move the ball forward on things that really matter day to day, good schools, making sure we have, you know, spending priorities that improve our quality of life. But it looks now like, you know, our elected officials, and I'm not going to say not all of them by any stretch, but anytime they see an opportunity, it's not about building bridges, it's about driving wedges. And we've got this with this this latest law enforcement incident, which started with an 8-second video clip from a passerby. And now, you know, I saw city commissioners actually doing a press conference with advocates for one side of this issue, and it really made me sick to my stomach. And it's not because I don't think there was something in this incident that we can learn from, but the one-sidedness of how they presented this issue is beyond me. And then, you know, I don't know if I've heard anybody else come back out and say anything, but in terms of taking this issue like we're going to do in the second segment and breaking it down and looking exactly what happened. And, you know, I don't know if we can't get together here locally where we go to school together, go to church together, we eat at restaurants together. There's really no hope. And I really, and we're going to spend some time on this over the next couple of months, try to get some elected officials in here and ask them, you know, what are you doing? And, you know, not only are we getting it on this law enforcement issue, in the third segment, you know, Jeff Schwerz of the Tallahassee Democrats got a story up that is so one-sided about the voting bill. And unfortunately, Mark Early, who is the supervisor of elections here in Leon County, has decided to go, seems like he's gone rogue in the sense of going, we've talked to him in a very measured manner about some of these parameters, but, you know, he's using terms like garbage and, you know, making a political play against the voting bill that was passed by the state legislature. This article, and we're going to go through this article and how biased it is and what it leaves out. And again, here locally, trying to divide us instead of talking about what in the bill. You know, I don't agree with everything that was in the voting bill, but there's some things in there that I do agree with that I think most people would agree with if they knew they were in there. But you can't write an article about the voting bill and leave out the term ballot harvesting. Well, that's what Mr. Schwerz did. I don't think any journalist can write an article about the voting bill and not refer to the grand jury findings in 2012 in South Florida, where they were investigating voter fraud with how it related to vote by mail. But We get that. That's what we get here. And so we'll talk about that in the bottom of the hour. And then in the fourth, our last segment, we're going to talk about Project Mango. More information is out about the fulfillment center. We still don't know the company that's behind it. However, more numbers have been put forward in terms of the incentives that they're looking for, the jobs they're promising. And we did a little research on our own Italics reports to go around the country and look at some other locations, other locales that had a full fulfillment center, be it by Amazon or Chewy.com, the pet online pet retailer. And, you know, we did that before they released the information last night. And it's pretty consistent on what we're seeing in terms of the jobs and the impact. So we're going to go over that. Also, we have jobs, the latest jobs numbers for the state of Florida and Leon County. And we're going to give you some information that you're not going to get anywhere else. How do you know where we are with when you talk about the unemployment rate and the number of job people we have employed, the size of our labor force? Well, you can't compare it to last year because of the COVID numbers. So you got to go back a couple of years. We have that data, and we're going to share it with you, and we're going to let you know where we are. You know, are we at 2019 numbers, 2018 numbers? How far off are we? We're going to give you those details. And we'll also give you an update on the latest Leon County COVID numbers, the dying virus. We'll continue to give the weekly updates for a little longer, but it's getting a little bit pointless because of where the numbers are and the way things are moving. But anyway, we'll give you an update on those numbers. But again, in my remaining 2 minutes here on the $100 million that's coming to the city and the county, you know, if you go to our website, TallisReports.com, we've got a story up on the county's numbers where they're looking at $57 million, and they've got seven categories where they're going to be spending this money. Revenue loss mitigation, infrastructure improvements, human services partner support, public health response support, small business support, county continuity of operations support, and also reserve replenishment. So they've got these categories, but within that, if you go to our website, you can see 20 line items where they're going to spend the $57 million. And, you know, the lost revenues is all about the taxes and the fees that they lost because of the pandemic. And, you know, that's taking up the largest chunk, probably about a third of the $57 million. And so, you know, the idea here is to make the governments, local governments, whole in the sense of if the pandemic had not happened, because, you know, one of the things is you get into a hole and it starts to affect the out years. What they're doing with this $57 million, and I don't know if they needed exactly $57 million, but that's what they're asking for, is they're trying to get into a position to where we can move forward from a financial perspective like the COVID pandemic never happened. Now, again, you know, there's a lot of money out here for the nonprofits that they're going to be looking at. Some of these projects, I don't understand how it's really related to the COVID pandemic. If you look at infrastructure improvements, how are we using, you know, $8 million? How are we getting $8 million for Woodville sewer because of the COVID pandemic? Now, I'm not saying we don't need to be doing sewer in Woodville, but I don't understand how we can be saying that qualifies under the because of a COVID pandemic or COVID pandemic relief funds. So anyway, you can go to our site and get a list of those categories and the line items where this money is being spent. All right, when we get back, we'll focus on law enforcement and the latest altercation between, minority community and law enforcement here, which has made the news. So stick with us. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. I've been down before. All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Above the Fold is brought to you by Epps Decorating Center. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way, and I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center. Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you. Give them a call at 385-6649. That's 385-6649. And we appreciate their sponsorship today on Above the Fold. All right, I want to pivot to law enforcement here in Tallahassee and discuss the incident that happened, a week to 10 days ago. You know, obviously there's been a lot of coverage in the media, a lot of emotional responses, both the TPD and the city trying to defend their actions, others coming out against what had happened. And, you know, I took the time, I saw the 8-second video from a passerby, but I also took the time to go and look at the videos of the whole event, the whole altercation. And I wanted to just go through exactly what happened. Because I think if you put this in context, there's a little bit for everyone in this altercation or this traffic stop. And so, and what I'm going by is public reports and the videos. A gentleman was pulled over. Actually, wasn't pulled over. He was stopped in the middle of the street, passed out in his car at a red light. And a police officer pulled up, woke him up, tried to get him out of the car. Evidently, there was back and forth. He called for a DUI investigator to come to the scene. When she showed up, she had her body camera on, and so you could, from that point on, you could see what was transpiring. And you know, the police officer that was there, she arrived, and he said, you know, he doesn't really want to talk to me. And so this lady, and I don't know her name, but she did a great job of being very respectful to this person who was obviously inebriated and sitting on the side of the road. He was very disrespectful, you know, dropping the F word every other sentence and just, you know, making the comment that, look, this is not a big deal. You know, I can't believe you guys are making a big deal about this, you know. And so she explained to him, look, you can drink as much as you want, but the problem comes into play when you get into a car, and that's what we have here. We have a problem because we think you might be drunk. And she basically laid out the rules. We're asking you to do a sobriety test, and you don't have to agree to do that. And I think she said, but if you don't, you know, we're going to have to arrest you. So the short of it is he agreed to do the sobriety test after, again, being very disrespectful. And at this point, he did figure out that he might get arrested, and the tension did increase. But I was really, I was impressed with the professionalism of the police officer that was in charge. They did the sobriety test and he failed, so they went to arrest him. Now, the problem here is this is when he resisted arrest, and the 8-second video by the passerby shows two police officers holding him down, trying to get him to cooperate, with another police officer struck him on the legs, I believe 3 or 4 times with his baton. So if you go back and look of the totality of what transpired here, you've got a DUI, someone who doesn't think a DUI is a big deal. And he said that, you know, this is not an issue. I just want to go home. So you got somebody who is resisting arrest, doesn't understand what a DUI is or the severity of it. And then the third thing is really showing very little respect to law enforcement. So you've got that. You've got this police officer who knocked on the window, immediately must have sensed there was going to be a problem, made a call for a DUI investigator who showed nothing but respect for the gentleman given the state that he was in. So I think so far at this point, things are moving along swimmingly for the law enforcement and how they're dealing with this. Now, the 8-second clip of the police officer hitting the resisting person with the baton obviously looks bad. And I think that there's no doubt that that probably was uncalled for. But what transpired now is this sudden rush to take that 8 seconds out of a 20 to 30 minute transaction or altercation and focus the attention on law enforcement. Now, I don't think there's anything with reviewing that and reviewing the use of force policy, But to totally ignore what transpired before, both the professionalism of the police officer, the lack of respect of the person who was sleeping at a red light because he had had too much to drink, and the resisting the arrest, if you don't take that in totality, you just take that 8-second video. First of all, only advocates do that. If you're a lawyer and you're representing this person, then that's all you want to talk about is that 8-second video. But when you get elected officials start doing that, I think that becomes a major problem. And that's what we're starting to see, as I talked about earlier in this segment, is we've got elected officials that are starting to try to divide us. Instead of building bridges and trying to figure out exactly how we can move forward and do better, we take this incident that I think, again, if you looked at it in its totality, is a learning incident, because it really shows what I just have talked about: professionalism, resisting arrest, lack of respect for law enforcement, and yes, possibly excessive use of force with 3 swats of a baton on somebody's leg because they were resisting arrest. So look at all of it. But to come out and make this all about the Tallahassee Police Department, given the things that we've had, that law enforcement has had to deal with over the last year, I think, again, it says a lot about motives. It says a lot about, you know, what they're advocating for. And look, there's a press conference with Commissioner Jeremy Matlow and Commissioner Jack Porter with the lawyer for the gentleman who was arrested for DUI. Now, I don't understand why elected officials would go ahead and side or have a press conference and choose sides in something that was something like this without understanding the impact of that. Now, I haven't seen or heard Mayor Daley make any comments about this, but I would hope that a leader in our community would take this and look at it and say, look, this is the incident, okay, and this is what we had to deal with. Now, should the person that was arrested be hit 3 times with a baton on his legs? You know, in a perfect world, probably no. But in a perfect world, you wouldn't be resisting arrest also. But that's not even talked about. It is, again, a pivot to criticize law enforcement, to further create this divide between those who support law enforcement and those who view them as, you know, using force at every turn. And it's a shame, because if you look at the process that took place here, an unfortunate incident when someone was, allegedly drunk, stopped in the middle of the road, falling asleep at a red light. If you look up to the point to where they said, look, sir, you're drunk, we have to arrest you, they handled this perfectly. And there was complete respect to the person until, you know, he resisted arrest. And so I don't understand why this isn't viewed, or why it isn't presented to our community in a more balanced way. I would understand this coming from an advocate, but when you've got city commissioners going out and taking a side, not presenting the whole case, I'm not sure what they're after here. I'm really not. I mean, it's one thing to look at the use of force policy, but maybe we should start. This gentleman didn't think driving while drunk was a big deal. Maybe we need some public service announcements about the impact of driving while drunk. But again, what's happened here from our political side, I don't think is acceptable. We'll try to get some people in here to talk about it, but we've got to stop. Our elected officials have got to stop advocating, picking out part of an incident and advocating on that part of the incident, when if you look at everything in total, you know, I think we can move the ball forward without being so negative towards law enforcement. All right, when we get back, we'll talk about the voting law and how, you know, they talk about a big lie. Well, one of the problems we're having right now is getting the facts about this voting law that was passed by the Florida legislature. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. In our last segment, we're going to give you a look at job numbers and tell you exactly how you'll know if we're doing well or not so well. We can't compare it to last year because of the COVID numbers, and we'll get into some specifics on Project Mango and the possible impact here. But now I wanted to turn to an issue that is getting a lot of news, and it falls back into the category that I think seems to be the theme of our show today, is how elected leaders are just trying to drive a wedge between people. They take these very controversial issues, and instead of talking about the nuance and the specifics, they just choose a side. And unfortunately, what we're seeing on this voting bill that was passed by the Florida legislature is we're seeing this across the country, but you know, we've seen the emotional outcries that after the pandemic, where rules were relaxed because of the pandemic and the ability to vote without coming in contact with somebody. Now, the attempt by some of these states to tighten some of the rules is being called Jim Crow rules, or be called, you know, voter suppression, and moves by white supremacists, instead of looking actually at what the bills are doing and talking about why they're doing it. Now, unfortunately, here in Leon County, our supervisor of elections, Mark Early, is quoted in a piece by Jeff Schwerz, one of the more one-sided pieces that he's done, and he does a lot on the issue. But Mr. Early's quoted as using some pretty strong language about the bill. You know, they asked him, why did the Florida legislature move forward with this bill? And he says, quote, supposedly it was to prevent future fraud, and that's a bunch of garbage. That's his quote. And, you know, the thing about this is you go through this article and it talks about the difficulties that the supervisor of elections are going to have with this bill. But there's two things here. First of all, not cited in this article was a grand jury investigation into voter fraud back in 2012 down in South Florida related to vote by mail. And if you look at their recommendations of what they think should have been done, and they weren't done immediately, but they are in this bill that was passed by the Florida legislature. And what the grand jury found out was people were using the ability to go around and collect absentee ballots, even though they didn't know the people that were casting those ballots. And that's called ballot harvesting. So they recommended that you do away with that, that you make it so that only certain people can collect absentee ballots, because of the potential of voting fraud. They also said that, look, we've got to have, they recommended that you have witness signatures for absentee ballots. You used to have that, but somehow that got out of the law. In other words, that was a situation where someone who was casting a vote by mail ballot would have to have a signature of someone else to verify that it was them. And obviously, you could only witness one or two of these absentee ballots. So that also put in safeguards with vote by mail. And this, one of the third thing that they recommended, or one of the next things they recommended, was that you require people to ask for absentee ballots every 2 years. And that's so that you don't have absentee ballots automatically going out to addresses where people have moved, and then you've got a ballot that someone can fill out and send in. And so those were things that the grand jury wanted to see put into law. They weren't called Jim Crow provisions back then. They were basically seen as steps to be sure that there was to eliminate voter fraud with regards to absentee voting. Well, now that's not in this article that is published by the Tallahassee Democrat. None of that is in here. There's no talk about the grand jury recommendations and why some of those issues might actually help the integrity of elections. You know, and they also don't mention the term ballot harvesting, which has become a big issue if you go all the way back to when California put it into play in 2014, 2015. And ballot harvesting is where people can actually go around and collect ballots from people, and they don't even know who they are. In other words, what happens if you have an absentee ballot that you decided you weren't going to vote, they can come around and say, look, let me help you fill this ballot out. Now, understand, when you vote in person, there is a 150-foot safe area where people can't talk to you. You get your ballot, you show them your ID, you get your ballot, no one else talks to you about what you're going to do with that ballot. Ballot harvesting allows organizations to go and find out who has these absentee ballots because they can get the information from the voting data, and they can actually harass or encourage whatever however you view it, but they can also help you fill out your ballot. Who's going to know? And so these are all changes that were made. Now, what I will say, because of the nature of this article being so biased towards one side of it, is there probably are some issues in this legislation. No legislation is perfect. That is going to make it a little bit harder for supervisor of elections. And let's take one example, drop boxes. There were no such thing as drop boxes or was not a controversy over drop boxes before the pandemic. But because of the pandemic, people wanted to make it easier to vote. And so drop boxes were adopted in a lot of these larger cities. And the issue here is if you have ballot harvesting is against the law in your state, as it was in Georgia, and you put the drop boxes out that are open for 24 hours, you really can't enforce the ballot harvesting law. And so what they did in Georgia was they said, look, we're going to keep drop boxes, but we're going to limit the numbers and we're going to make sure that they are monitored. So that's considered Jim Crow type law by a lot of people who don't just want drop boxes put all over the county, not monitored, and I guess they would probably advocate for ballot harvesting also. Here in Florida, what's going on is they're also going to allow drop boxes, but once again, they're going to have to be monitored so they can enforce ID laws, the ballot harvesting laws, and so that again is viewed as extreme. Now, the point here is that if we turn to the print media here in Florida, the mainstream legacy media, you get this article that once again drives a wedge between voters because they make it look like that there are no provisions in this voting bill that are warranted. And it's a simple Google search to go back to the grand jury and to put those recommendations in this article to show a basis in fact, for why you would want to change that law. Now, you've got to ask yourself, why didn't the journalist do that? Is it because the journalist is not up on how to do a Google search? Probably not. Is it because he didn't know about the grand jury findings? Again, I would disagree. I think the only conclusion you can come to is that that the journalist is biased, and in a very big way, because, look, seldom is there a document like a grand jury findings with recommendations that you could really put an end to this talk about Jim Crow laws and voter suppression. Now, you want to argue about the specific ID requirements or where the drop boxes might need to go, how long they should be open. That's fine. But to say that this bill is garbage without citing the grand jury and their recommendation, it's not only biased, it's malpractice. Knowing what I know about the grand jury recommendations and what's in the bill that was passed by the Florida legislature, I mean, this would fail. This article would get an F in a journalism class. It would be cited as being not being what we call it. I guess the term would be not including data or information that would call to question some of the comments made by the supervisor of elections. And so, again, it's unfortunate, and it puts a burden on you, the listener, to get out and have to find the facts. You need more than one news source when you're looking at not only national issues, state and local issues. So we'll try to keep you up to date on where that information can be found. And again, I'm not advocating just one site, but read the Democrat, read Talis reports, read a lot of different news so you can figure out exactly what the facts are. All right, when we get back, we'll focus on job numbers. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold. All right, welcome back to our last segment here on Above the Fold. It's Tuesday, Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Above the Fold is brought to you in part by Spartan Stoneworks. One of the most common and cost-effective upgrades anyone can make to their home is the kitchen. You're almost guaranteed to increase the value of your home with an updated kitchen, but quality materials like granite, quartz, and marble countertops can get expensive. Well, not when you go with Spartan Stoneworks. Pricing will be lower than anywhere else because they do not mark up the cost of the stone materials. The way they see it, since they didn't carve it out of the mountain themselves, they're not going to charge any made-up fees as if they did. So give them a call at 765-2037. That's 765-2037. We appreciate their sponsorship. Okay, real quick, not going to spend a lot of time on the update of the COVID numbers. The trends continue here in Leon County. The cases were down. Hospitalizations are below 20. And I'm referring to the seven-day average. Cases are below 50. Positivity is oscillating between 4% and 6%. And I will say again on that, which has been a little bit of an issue, is that positivity is almost irrelevant when you start talking about the number of cases. If the case number is so low, the positivity can be changed by just a few numbers. So the two important things here to look at now are the case numbers and the hospitalizations. And they are all headed in the right direction. Now, on to job numbers. As we've talked about this before on the show, is that one of the things we like to do is you look at real estate numbers, job numbers, and you try to compare them to the previous year to give you an idea of where we are in moving forward, how we're progressing. Obviously, given the problems with the COVID pandemic and its impact on the local economy or the national economy, for that matter, it's tough to compare April job numbers with April of last year because, you know, last year in April, we had 130,000 people employed. This April, we've got 148,000 people employed. So we recovered from the pandemic. Doesn't mean that we're doing great in terms of unemployment or job numbers, or you wouldn't know by looking at those numbers. So what we've done is we've gone and looked at the two previous years to get an idea of where we are. And interestingly enough, the April job numbers for 2021 show that we have 148,900 people working. In April 2019, we had 150,000 people working. And April of 2018, we had 148,900 people working. So we're really, in terms of the number of people employed, we're at the 2018 level in April. Now, the unemployment level back in 2018 was 3.2%. This year, it's 4.6%. So what's happened is our labor force has increased compared to 2018, which makes some sense. So based on my calculations, we're about 2,200 jobs short from having an unemployment rate that was 3.2% in 2018. Now, our unemployment rate in 2019 was 2.8%. So, you know, for us to get to there, we would even have to have more jobs. But between 2,000 and 3,000 jobs is where we have to improve. We're at 2018 levels to get to where we are in 2019 and where we should have been in 2020 and 2021, absent the pandemic. That's where we are. So again, trying to compare these metrics is going to be a little bit more difficult in this year. And so what we're going to do is give you more information like that. I'm sure you won't get this type of analysis anywhere else, but the job numbers are good here locally compared to last year in the pandemic. We're recovering nicely, but we're still a year or so behind where we probably should be. Now, what could help us get there? That's a nice segue into Project Mango. For those who are not familiar with that, this is a code name that is given to projects by local economic development groups These are companies that are looking to either expand or start new operations in a location, and they don't want to name themselves right away for competitive reasons. And so what we do know is that Project Mango is a fulfillment center that is looking at 180 acres approximately out at the corner of Mayhand and I-10 on the east side of town. This would be where the car museum is. This would be property that is owned by DeVoe Moore. And so it is only categorized as Project Mango and a fulfillment center. Now, we have an article up that we put up last night. There was some more information released about Project Mango by the Office of Economic Vitality. Want to run through that. Again, they still have not released who the company is. But if you're talking about a fulfillment center, you're obviously talking about Amazon or any of these other online retailers like Chewy.com, the pet online retailer. They build big distribution centers around the country. But this is a company expansion, which will include a 650,000 square foot fulfillment center, a capital investment of $200 million, 1,000 new jobs paying at or above $15 an hour to be created in the next 2 years, an economic impact of about $451 million, creating about 1,300 permanent jobs. This would be jobs related to maybe businesses around the fulfillment center, and also 2,200 construction jobs. Now, this is going through the Office of Economic Vitality because the company that's moving here wants some incentives. And part of the deal here is over the next 6 years, they want $2.5 million in incentives that would come from the capital budget. If you remember, the blueprint sales tax has some money set aside to lure these companies into the Leon County area. So this is what they're looking at, is moving into this area. Now, they go on to say that the agenda item states that the project is highly competitive and the company is also considering other locations. The recommendation or approval of this incentive package does not ensure that the company will select Tallahassee. And finally, the incentives for the IA board's consideration are performance-based. In other words, the company must meet the agreed-upon jobs and capital investment to remain eligible for the $2.5 million in investments. Now, are in incentives. So they're going to, the OEV or the Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency Board is going to vote on this recommendation on May the 27th. So we'll have more information about that. But one of the things that we did at Tallahassee Reports, we went and looked at the impact of some fulfillment centers that were placed in other communities, say, 2 or 3 years ago. We looked at one in Nampa, Idaho, and one in just outside Charlotte, North Carolina. They're about the same size as the fulfillment center that is being proposed here. One of them is Chewy.com in outside Charlotte. The one in Idaho was Amazon. And basically, it fit the parameters that we're seeing here in this proposal with the number of jobs, the capital investment, new infrastructure built around the fulfillment center. I know up in North Carolina, the county commission there had to give about $2 million in incentives, which would be comparable to what we're seeing. The Chewy.com's distribution center was about 750,000 square feet. And that is now built, and they've already met their job requirements or their job goals. And they haven't, I don't think it's been up and running for more than 6 months. I think it was 1,200 jobs. So they're looking at exceeding the number of jobs there. So now I know in the coming days, or actually probably at this meeting on May 27th, we'll hear about all the good news. There are some critics of these types of jobs. There always is a downside of them being low paying, although, you know, we'll get some more specifics on that, I'm sure, that a lot of these jobs will have benefits. They are. They consider them to be low skill jobs. And so there will be some critique there, but I don't think there's any denying the financial benefit. So we'll have to see if the community is up for this type of project, given the makeup of our local economy and how it would. And so I guess the next step would be, look, we are in on this. We are ready for to go ahead and invest this $2 million, and then we'll see if this company decides to move here. And I will say that logistics and fulfillment centers is one of the categories that our economic development team here locally has listed as, you know, an area we want to focus on. So anyway, all right, well, that's all we got today, Tuesday. We'll have a lot more information Thursday, I'm sure, regarding this project and other things that we've discussed today. The Leon County Commission use of the $57 million. We'll get more information on that, too. All right, thanks for joining us here today, and we'll be back on Thursday. Waiting for the